The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, You're Invited to a Feast for Your Hair, an Abundance of Tools for Every Black Hairstyle. Number 4. A breather for your scalp. Q Red Dew Scrub Scalp Cleansing Massage Brush. Number 5. Somewhere Soft to Lay Your Mane. The Mane Silk Pillowcase. Number 6. An Easier Way to Get Curls for Your Teeny Weeny Afro. Twisted Up Comb. The next article is titled Soft to Touch. This season's head-to-toe furry trend brings cheer to your winter wardrobe. Soft touch accessories are the perfect items to add to your cart this season. Spice things up with a furry hat, bag, or pair of boots. There's something about working texture into an outfit that makes it an outfit. Plus, if you're in need of a pick-me-up during a drab winter day, a gentle hand graze over your fleecy accessory should put you in a sensory meditative state. The next article is titled Talking Teeth: How Dental Veneers Can Give You the Smile You Want. In the first verse of Little Baby's song, Whoa, he declares, not the big cheek teeth, that's embarrassing. The rapper is referring to porcelain veneers, the teeth coverings that, in the past few years, have become exceedingly popular. Veneer-focused content is commonplace on social media. No matter what else your timeline or For You page on TikTok may render, veneers now show up almost as a status symbol for celebrities. Applied in a procedure dating back almost a century, veneers were once a strictly customized experience, one that considered the patient's existing teeth, their mouth's shape and size, their lifestyle, and even their skin tone. Today, there has been a shift. When one thinks of the dental adjustment, images of neon white coverings too big for the mouth they occupy may come to mind. Some folks even refer to veneers as chiclets, making reference to the stark square shape of the widely known candy coated chewing gum. This is the appearance Little Baby vividly advises against. He's not the only one discouraging it. Dentists with decades of experience are also cautioning against recent unconventional and sometimes dangerous trends in cosmetic dentistry. Count Pasha DDS and Ben DDS of APA Aesthetic in Los Angeles among them. After improving the smiles of celebs such as Nina Parker, who recently made the decision to close her gap, Christian Noel Crawley, and countless others, Pasha and Ben continue to focus on crafting natural-looking grins that are 100% personalized. The issue with social media is you can get overwhelmed because there's so much to click and flip through. Pasha says of the idea that veneers should imitate the smile of another person. Someone else's teeth may not look good on you, even if they look good on them, but explaining that to some patients is very difficult. Many people also seem convinced that installing veneers means the natural tooth has to be drilled down to nearly nothing, but that's not the case. Veneers are porcelain pieces with a contact lens thickness, Pasha explains. So, where does the notion that you have to cut down the tooth
come from. More than likely, it's actually referring to crayons, which can also be made of porcelain, but require a vastly different process. The difference between veneers and crayons is that veneers generally just cover the surface, and you maintain the majority of your tooth structure, Pashaw explains. When you see these videos and the teeth are nubs, you have to wrap the entire tooth with a crown. At Apaw Aesthetic, unless it's absolutely necessary, only the thinnest outer layer is compromised, something I made sure of before choosing to have the procedure myself. We are adding to what you have in order to improve, Pashaw assures me. It's not that I hated my teeth, or even that they were in dire need of an adjustment. I just knew they could look better. I wore braces in middle school, underwent crown lengthening during the COVID-19 pandemic, and recently completed Invisalign treatment. Even after all of that, I wasn't totally pleased. My two front teeth were much longer than the rest of my upper level teeth. Those two front teeth were also inverted a bit, and like many others, I desired them to be a tad wider. After painstaking research on the veneer procedure, and particularly on dentists who could perform it, the clear choice for me was Apa Aesthetic in LA. During the initial consultation, Ben examined my teeth and got a clear explanation of what I was looking to achieve. We have a very good idea of exactly where we need your teeth to end up, he told me. We know the color we are going to end up with and how long or how short the veneers need to be. We'll use that guide to get us exactly where we need to finish. Ben notes that during these in-depth consultations, they often discover that a patient barely needs any work. However, that wasn't the case for me. Granted, I didn't require a full mouth of veneers, but adjustments at both the top and the bottom could definitely enhance my smile. Once we were aligned on the end goal, impressions of my teeth were taken, and on that same day, my temporary veneers were crafted by the master in-house ceramist and applied. This is not necessarily common for the first appointment, but because I was commuting from out of town, the normal two sessions separated by 1 to 2 weeks were condensed into one. After the temporaries were adhered, I was able to take my new teeth for a spin to check not only for aesthetics, but for comfort. Did I like my new smile? Did it complement my mouth? Was I eating with ease? Were they white enough? Were they too white? I returned to LA for my final appointment with only one request for adjustment, that the finished smile be slightly whiter, but not too much whiter, as I wanted them to maintain the appearance of a natural smile. That's exactly what I got. And after a journey of more than 15 years to achieving my best smile, I finally have it. Nothing good lasts forever, so there will come a day when replacements will become necessary, but that's no time soon. These will last 20 plus years. Typically, what you'll see is, as you age, your gums recess more and you start seeing areas of teeth that may have been hidden before. Most of the time, when we change a patient's veneer, it's because the patient just doesn't like the aesthetics anymore as they've aged. Not that the integrity of the veneer is bad. The two dentists have assured me that so long as I take care of my veneers, brushing and flossing regularly, they also won't change color during that time. And while they did cost a pretty penny, Depending on the market you're in, a personalized in-house crafted veneer can run you anywhere from $2,000 to $5,000. In my case, it was well worth the money. I have a smile that was custom made for me and not anyone else. I received a top of the line experience, and yes, I still have all my real teeth left. The next article is titled Culture, Leaders of the New Art World. Meet the Black women artists, curators, and collectors at the forefront of the evolving art industry. While visual art is a ubiquitous and multifaceted feature of many Black experiences, the formal art world can be an esoteric, exclusionary space. It doesn't always acknowledge the contributions of Black women artists, curators, and gallerists, or of the many more who work in various aspects of the industry. In 2018, the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, in partnership with the Association of Art Museum Directors, the American Alliance of Museums, and Ithaca S plus R, conducted its second comprehensive art museum staff demographic survey. Their findings: the percentage of African American curators increased from 2% in 2015 to a mere 4% in 2018. Only 20% of intellectual leadership positions at museums were found to be held by people of color. Black women are often at the forefront of making and marketing Black art, in addition to marshalling it to the center from the margins. As many of them head to Miami Beach for Art Basel December 1 to 3rd, we highlight five who are leading that charge. Nicole Vassell. In 2021, more than a year into the pandemic, Nicole Vassell opened her contemporary gallery in the Chelsea neighborhood of Manhattan, New York City's renowned art district. After decades of working in the art space as a dealer, curator, and advisor, including for big-name celebrities such as Alicia Keys and her husband, Kasim Swiss Beats Dean, Vassell saw the gallery opening less as a lifelong dream come to fruition and more as an opportunity to respond to the political climate. The 2020 murder of George Floyd by police in Minnesota had instigated a societal reckoning throughout the nation that elevated a consciousness of Black life and Black culture. People seemed to hunger for a greater sense of meaning around a conversation that had, frankly, already begun, Vassell says. So yeah, I think it just propelled me. The art juggernaut describes getting her start the old-fashioned way, with an apprenticeship that set her on a path to be educated by other art dealers and later to become one herself. She notes that these relationships, formed early in her career, helped her to grasp that understanding the history of the business side of the industry was as important as comprehending the history of art. Acquiring the wisdom that one gains from simply coming into the pot of knowledge that the greats before me were able to impart held a lot, she says. The experiential knowledge she gained when she first started in the industry, combined with her being born and raised in Kingston, Jamaica, an artistic society with visual cues that Vassell describes as highly articulated due to sparse resources, given the emphasis on the arts in the education system of her hometown. Despite this scarcity, the gallerist had a strong introduction to the art world. One of few Black women in her position today, Vassell doesn't hesitate to express her particular perspective, deciding on the weight of her aims in the space, from the commercial to the radical, is an important part of her considerations. But while she's aware of the significance of her representation, she asserts that curating art the way she does is more about capacity than identity. It's really a psychological thing, much more than anything else, she reflects. One just has to have the wherewithal to do it. Elise Archer Corte. A senior leader in Apple's design research team by day, Elise Archer Corte spends much of the rest of her time focused on the upkeep of her wonderful 18th century home in upstate New York, the Knoxon House, which can be rented for private events and photo shoots. Archer Corte is also an influential art collector, having moved around a lot during her childhood, relocating from California to Texas with stops in between before finally attending college in New York. She says she developed her art sensibilities from this transient experience, primarily influenced by her mother, who raised Archer Corte on her own. I grew up in the kind of household where everything we had, my mother had worked really hard for, she says. Everything was really beautiful and hand-selected, not all expensive, but all important to her. According to Archer Corte, these early lessons of maintaining beautiful things extended to objects beyond those we might all agree on as art. After studying art history in school, she landed coveted positions in the field, working first at Sotheby's, one of the world's best-known brokers of collectibles, fine art, and jewelry, and later at Phillips, a leading auction house in the market for the same items. Her experiences in these settings were a stark contrast in values from the purpose and perception of art she had adopted in childhood. My understanding of art was always from the perspective of love, she explains. It was about what has the strongest emotional connection to you. And then I went to Sotheby's, where, as you know, the emphasis is on sale price. While Archer Corte did enjoy her time working among beautiful art pieces, she found the transactional nature of the business to be heartbreaking and a rude awakening for one who was attentive to Black artists who didn't and don't always get their due. In these early days of her career, she began to collect art more seriously. When she wanted an item that was more expensive than she could easily afford, she would consider how her mother would have responded. Her mother's wisdom still guides and encourages her when she chooses an artwork. If you're thinking about what it's worth, don't buy it. Archer Corte remembers her mother saying, I think this is what truly gave me my start. When I first felt I had the permission to collect pieces that made me feel good, regardless of what they might be worth in the long run. Teresa Cromati. Considering whether artists are born or made, Teresa Cromati says, you could totally walk away from your destiny and not show up for it. But recognizing the call to be an artist as something that exists within and must be nourished, she has never imagined herself as anything else, not since her mother enrolled her in art class at the Maryland Institute when she was in kindergarten. Like her paintings, she considers her Guyanese American heritage to be multifaceted. She inherited two Black traditions and their accompanying experiences from her parents. Living in that duality really formed my identity, she says, and just thinking about my practice, it is very layered as a result. In her studio in Brooklyn, where she resides, Chromati says she's often thinking about how to pair contradictions to find consensus between them. I like to create an obstacle or challenge and then find a harmony and union within that, she says, describing how she approaches her work. And I can say that has been similar to my experience growing up, being surrounded by opposing cultures. When making her art, Chromati doesn't necessarily start with a particular audience in mind. That's because she is first and foremost in conversation with herself. I do like to add my different entry points to the work, she says. Ideally, I would love to have this intimate moment with Black women. However, many other people are going to be seeing and engaging with the work, and that's completely fine. At this year's Art Basel Miami, Chromati will show her paintings with Jessica Silverman Gallery. While the industry, along with its fairs and festivals, can be exclusionary, Chromati sees her presence as an opportunity for large numbers of people to see her work at once, says the artist. It's a nice moment to be able to put out a thought and encourage people to keep looking for a deeper conversation. Qualisha Wood. For textile artist Qualisha Wood, making art began when she was only 5 or 6 years old and growing up in New Jersey. Realizing she was talented, her parents encouraged her by buying all the supplies her heart desired, though even back then, she never colored within the lines. She pressed pause on creating art in high school as she and her family questioned whether she could make a career out of it. But her love of the medium won out, as Wood eventually attended the Rhode Island School of Design for her BFA and later the Cranbrook Academy of Art. Both institutions are among the most prestigious art schools in the country. While at the Rhode Island School of Design, RISD, an incident with a professor in Wood's Spatial Dynamics course provoked strong emotions in how she saw herself and her work. Wood recalls that she had begun to think of the social impact of her art, and she wanted to make a slave ship to the dismay of her instructor. We had a lot of disagreements because basically he thought I was making his class too political, she says, and also because I don't make the best 3D work. So he told me to drop out, and I considered it. Fortunately, she didn't drop out. Instead, she decided that her art must be a powerful force to have elicited such a strong reaction. She soon moved her practice towards textiles, relishing the idea of using everyday objects in her pieces and expounding on the political statement on Black life in her work. Landing in Brooklyn following her time at Cranbrook in Michigan, Wood began to feel as if she was again making art for a community of people with whom she identified and to whom she belonged. Last year's The Black Madonna Whore Complex, a subversive self-portrait made with cotton weave and glass seed beads, was compelling evidence of that. At the time, she'd been listening to Kanye West, Bound 2, repeatedly, and she began to meditate on lyrics that she interpreted as juxtaposing Black women against his estranged wife, Kim Kardashian, the former bad, opinionated, undeserving, and the latter good, non-confrontational, deserving. Woods wanted to rebel against this message. She recalls thinking, where can Black women freely express themselves and not have it thrown back in their faces? And then she got busy with her textiles and beads, fashioning an answer to her own question. Ashley James, PhD. In November 2019, Ashley James, PhD, became the Guggenheim's first full-time Black curator in its contemporary art department. Opening in April 2021 and running through September, her first exhibit, Off the Record, featured 13 artists in the collection. It was organized around the theme of how history is framed and documented, given the heightened engagement with the realities of structural racism that the country was undergoing at the time. The New York exhibit was ripe for the moment. Having received her doctorate from Yale University in English Literature and African American Studies, James has an artistic consciousness informed by and inherently connected to her Black Studies perspectives. I always say that Black Studies is a lens, it's a reflection. It's a way that I see the world in general, she says. So, this concept of the archive, the questioning of objectivity, this idea that history is often subjective on behalf of specific groups of people to the detriment of marginalized subjects, those are all the concepts that are key to Black Studies. The weight of being a first, especially given the themes of James's inaugural exhibition, in which her interests coincide with an intense political moment in the aftermath of the death of George Floyd, could ordinarily complicate the motivations of someone in her position. But James's artistic intentions are crystal clear. This is partially because she sees her work as a continuation of the efforts of all who document Black life, but it's also because James sees her work outside of the context of any celebrity. I'm not famous. Nobody's checking for me, she says, laughing.
Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.